Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a serial entrepreneur from India, currently speaking to me from Italy, Mr. Rohit Raj. Rohit, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ashutosh. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
This is my pleasure to be on this podcast.
Thank you. Rohit is a three-time entrepreneur. He's a part-time investor. And in his own words, he's a full-time problem solver. He's the founder of Chatterbox, which is chtrbox.com. And he has been recognized as one of the 40 under 40. So Rohit, I know you are a branding expert and I want to talk branding with you. But before that, tell me about Chatterbox and your exit.
I think my journey actually starts with Glitch. That's the company that I first co-founded in 2009. Mm-hmm. This is primarily in the advertising space. So I came from a background of filmmaking. I studied in Symbiosis, studied filmmaking, joined Channel V, which at that point in time was a music channel.
Yeah.
It was doing some great content and stuff. What Channel V did was it taught us the advent of doing things, big things at small budgets, right? Mm-hmm. And around 2009, Channel V was looking at pivoting out from where they were at to becoming, to talk to more middle India as opposed to the India they spoke to earlier.
Right.
And their answer was that the India they spoke to earlier has moved to the internet.
Mm.
So we will start talking to them as opposed to trying to solve for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when Varun and my co-founder, both of us decided that, hey, there's a problem to be solved here.
Mm.
If there's something happening on the internet, why isn't anybody else talking on the internet? Can we set up something? So that's how Glitch came to be. Glitch was the first. We started a digital first production house where we started doing content for the web. But this is in 2009, where it's very, very early stage.
Right.
We were still talking to clients, and this was almost like a tick box in the client saying, let's do one digital video. And that's how it started off.
Mm.
But we were, I think, right place, right time. We started scaling quickly. 2011, we made a pivot to becoming a full service agency, an agency in the digital space. And that's how we Glitch became from a production house to an agency, where we started solving for Strat, started telling them, hey, listen, there is so much more that digital has to offer than this. As we scaled that, I think we started eating into the business of the big ATL agencies, as they call it, right? Because digital suddenly became mainstream, and we were partners with brands since day one. So that's when WPP realized that, hey, listen, these are people who are eating into our business. Let's have a conversation with them. Let's figure where we move. And what helped was Varun and I came from never worked in an advertising agency before. So we set up an agency without having worked in an agency. So we didn't know the rules. So we didn't know what we were breaking.
Mm.
So we got into that spectrum, and that's how we scaled.
Nice.
And now nobody else would understand this formula. So then WPP turned around and said, okay, the best way to do this is maybe to acquire. So that's when our first exit happened with Glitch. So we got acquired as Glitch.
Mm.
While our conversations with WPP was happening, there was another key spectrum, which was called influencer marketing, that was kind of cropping up, exactly how social media marketing cropped up in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
2015 was that. And funnily, it was we were handling Pepsi and we were handling Unilever at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were doing an activity for both. And I remember looking at the sheet of influencers, and Pepsi had the same set of influencers as Pril did.
Okay.
And Pril, which is a dishwashing soap, Pepsi, which is talking to the youth, we didn't understand why it was there.
The
point then was influencers were people who had X number of followers.
Correct.
He said, is there a better way to solve for this? And can tech help solve this? And that's how Chatterbox came to be. We built out, we said, okay, there's a platform to be built where depending on what category you're working in, depending on the relevance, resonance, etc., of that category, can we identify people? And that's how Chatterbox came to be and started Chatterbox. But I couldn't be running two firms at the same time. So what I decided was at that point, we acquired another company called Let's Intern that was kind of exiting. And I found my co-founder of Chatterbox there. Pranay came on board and he took the thing. Because I was exiting my previous relationship with Glitch, etc. And I was in the WP ecosystem. I need to spend a lot more time there. So I took a backseat at Chatterbox, while Pranay led the whole. We scaled again, like I said, right place, right time. 2015, early in the game. By 2019, we were the hot guns.
Amazing.
The pandemic helped even more because by then we'd built the whole largest network of influencers, creators, etc. And the creator economy was booming. Q, which is a media-led company in the US with a television channel in India, they were trying to figure how they could leverage creators best. And they ended up having a conversation with us. They really liked what we were bringing to the table. And that's how Chatterbox then QV decided to acquire. So that's my second exit.
Amazing.
That's
amazing.
So yeah, that's the story.
What an amazing journey. What an amazing journey you've had, and in all the right areas of, and you seem to have just caught the curve at the beginning and everything that you've done. Fantastic. Congratulations. So let me ask you a couple of classical branding questions, then I'll move into the other parts. So let me start by asking you, Rohit, what goes into building a successful brand?
Oh, that's a good question. There are many parameters that go into building a successful brand, but you know what? A successful brand for me is one that can stand the test of time, right? So I think the successful brands are the brands that build love. So it's very easy to build likable brands, but the brands that stand the test of time are the brands that people love. So we call that the journey. I would term it as a journey from liked brand to favorite brand. So which is, if I give you an example, Maggie is a great example of that. Has seen its ups and downs through everything else. But no matter what, even at their lowest of phases, when the government has called them out, science has called it out, health experts have called them out for this thing, it's such a loved brand that all of us users at Brand came out there, supported it, and it didn't take too long for it to come and ride that way. So it's, so a brand, building a brand that you love is the key to a successful brand. And then everything else will work.
Well said. You know, and I'm from a very different vintage from you, but a similar thing that some people in the audience and our viewers and listeners may identify was the Coke Classic. You know, and how the market actually reacted when they decided to change the Coke. But the other question, and it's an interesting segue or response to my next question, which is that what makes a brand? I mean, brands are living beings. What makes some stay for generations and some die early? One of them you said is love.
It's, I think, a brand that is able to play into culture. And culture is a very abused word today because everybody tries to say, but a brand that's able to tap into culture and mold itself with that is the brand that stays for the longest time, right? So it's, and when I say the word culture, because today if you look at it, there are so many brands that are very purpose driven. So just because there is Mother's Day happening, they will jump onto it. Everybody wants to jump onto it and build something around it. That doesn't make a brand. A brand has to stand for a, like, it's almost like the brands that write down values, not just on paper, but also implement them in real life. Another example I would say is, for me, Titan as a brand, right? Has always put itself as saying it's a future forward brand. It's it's open. It's a happy brand, but it's also very future forward. It's, so which is when they take a stand. They've taken a stand in culture at different points. When 377 happened, they took a stand. When the whole conversation around the dark beauty was happening, they took a stand. So it's a brand that is playing into culture, not for the sake of it. So purpose, not for the sake of purpose, but rather standing for a value is the brand that's probably
interesting. Very interesting. So now let me move from the traditional classical questions to some more of what we have been speaking about before we started talking about, before when you were telling me about Chatterbox, etc. You know, when I was growing up in marketing, 79, 80, 81, in my days with ITC, etc. The forms of marketing were very different. Today, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, there is a new breed of influencers. You know, earlier it was Bollywood stars, it was cricket stars, and I'm not saying they're not influencers, but there's a new breed of influencers. How are they adding value or maybe creating problems for a brand?
So, I mean, like you said, what we called as Bollywood stars, they were the first set of influencers that came in. Right? What happened today is that that pyramid has grown. a lot more. So you have right on top, you have these celebrities that you know of, which is the Bollywood star. Then comes the middle rung, which is because thanks to the internet, everybody suddenly had their 15 seconds of fame. So that gave birth to the creators, as we call it, right? So creators in each of these categories, somebody who's reviewing, somebody who's making some products, they came into place in the second. And finally, the third rung came the last set of influencers who are what we call as the distributors. These are people who follow trends. They talk about it. But in a lot of cases, the micro guys are where the sale happens.
Correct.
The top guys is where the brand is being built. So I don't expect a Shah Rukh Khan to ever drive a Hyundai, right? But and that he'll talk about Hyundai as a Santro as a brand or a Creta as a brand. And then they'll talk, a lot of people hear him out for this. The creator will sit and review the brand that may lead to a certain amount of sale.
Correct.
Right at the bottom comes you and me. Like, for example, I would talk to four other friends of mine and say, guys, I have been driving this car. It's fab. You should buy it. And that will lead to the first sale and so on. So the sale happens right at the bottom. The middle rung for me is the guys who could create the sale, etc. The top rung is just pure play to build the brand. And that's how influencers are working on every spectrum. So the making and breaking of a brand happens in the middle two segments. So if one person on top ends up saying the wrong thing, it does impact the brand that he or she is endorsing. And then it trickles down with four people jumping in and so on.
Fascinating. Fascinating. And there is this whole change in the ecosystem of what used to be the ecosystem between print and television and cinema halls, etc., to now the digital ecosystem. How are brands and brand managers adjusting to this completely new animal called the digital ecosystem?
Yeah, I remember back in the day, there used to be slides which said ATL campaign, then digital as had one segment, etc.
ATL, BTL, today, I think,
And today it's digital is now the way of life, right? So at end of the day, I don't remember the last time I watched television for the sake of television, which is not to watch Fire Stick or Netflix or so on and so forth. Right? So, and a lot of consumption today is happening on phones. With Jio coming in across the board, I mean, everybody uses a phone for consuming content and data being so cheap. Right? So digital suddenly become the front and center of it. Now, with brand managers also, I've noticed that the play has changed. It's no longer... So what used to be earlier... Every campaign was led by a hero campaign, which is on TV. So that would mean in a year, we would do four different campaigns on TV and so on and so forth. Has now become a weekly thing that will happen on the digital. So in digital, everything, I mean, the shelf life of things is not much. Right? So the good thing is also that people now have the money to experiment with it. So before I come, say, if I'm changing a brand positioning from A to B, earlier we would do a focus group with whatever close set. Here, the same a piece of content is put out and let's see how people react. And it's easy to put that out on a digital spectrum, understand how they react, and then mold it basis of feedback. So things keep changing. So I think what the biggest change that has come in is there is no longer a 1 year plan that a brand manager comes to the table with. Because I remember earlier they'd say, okay, our plan for this entire year is this. Now it's a Q1 plan, Q2 plan, Q3 plan. There's no more FY plans.
Well said. Very well said. And my next question is on the communication. You know, again, I remember full page ads, big billboards, one and a half minute ads in the cinema halls. And then along comes this complete compression of communication to 10 seconds, 15 seconds on TikTok. And now 3 seconds, 5 seconds, 7 seconds. How are you as brand people communicating in such a short time span?
I think Ogilvy said this best when he did at some point, right? Nobody wakes up in the... I think it was Ogilvy. I may be completely wrong. But somebody had quoted saying that nobody wakes up in the morning saying, what ad am I going to watch? Right? Nobody opens a newspaper saying, what ad am I going to read? They end up reading a piece of content. It happens to be an ad. Great. And that's how it is. So today, if I look at it, that same principle applies even till date. Right? The length, etc., is not what it is. It's now come down to what is the content you're putting out and how. And I think the biggest change I've seen is the move that every brand has done from telling people what it is to showing people it is. So it's a show don't tell approach across the spectrum. So that's the only way you can communicate in the shortest time frame. So if you look at Apple, which put out these huge hoardings, they didn't say anything. They put out great photographs and it just said short on the iPhone.
Correct.
So they didn't tell you that they have a 13 megapixel phone, ABC, because that jargon nobody's going to get and nobody has the time to read it.
Absolutely.
They have the time to read short on an iPhone, and a good looking picture means the camera. Let's assume that you are smart enough to understand this.
Absolutely.
And so the show don't tell approach is what it is today.
Fantastic. So Rohit, I'm now going to move to the next segment of our conversation, and that's you as a startup entrepreneur. And you're probably one of the few people I've spoken to who's had three successful exits. And I'm sure you're an investor in several startups as well. Let me start by asking you that based on your own experience, what are some of the basic mistakes a lot of startup entrepreneurs make?
I like the fact that you use the word mistake in it, and I keep repeating myself a lot when I say this, because I think the biggest mistake anybody makes is trying not to make a mistake.
Okay. Right?
The when you operate from a fear of mistakes, of committing a mistake, you start then taking the safe route out. And the minute you take the safe route out, you stop taking risks. And that, I think, is the biggest downfall for entrepreneurs. So it's okay to go fail. It's okay to go make a mistake. Because when you're trying to make something new, you'll make a mistake. But if you try not to make a mistake, you'll not end up making something new. You will try to ape something else. And that, there's no place for number two in a startup journey. Right?
Well, so that's well said. And another question that is often asked from me, which I'm going to ask from you, is should a startup founder go solo? Or should she or he have a co-founder?
I've been through this journey two times, and both with co-founders, and I'm now on my path to my next startup, also with a co-founder. And trust me, I would say this upfront that, I mean, if you want to walk far, walk together.
Okay.
If you want to walk fast, walk alone. So that's the, because I think of, having a co-founder really, really helps, because, and especially a co-founder with complementing skills. So there's only so much you can do, and you don't want to be drinking your own Kool-Aid. So somebody has to call you out on things, somebody you can jam with. That really helps. So I would definitely, I will always recommend a co-founder.
Wonderful. The other question that a lot of people ask is, when should a startup start to scale up?
Well, that's a, if you were to, I don't know if there's a timeline you can draw to, right? But I think every startup, in my opinion, that you, when you start something, you're starting with a vision to get somewhere. You will not get there on day one, right? So first step for me would be to identify if this, so all startups are trying to solve a problem. First step is to identify, is this problem really worth solving, or is this a problem only in your head, right? And that for me is the product market fit.
Right.
And we try to put that out and understand the minute you see that there is a product market fit and people do need it, etc. That is the good space for you to then get into the scale up space. So for me, a startup is good for you to answer. So you may have identified a problem. You may have identified a path to solve that problem. Go build out the product that is going to help this thing. 9 out of 10 times that path that you built may not be the right path. So you'll have to try finding different ways to solve this problem till you hit the place where everybody else resonates with you. And then it's good to scale. Well, otherwise, it, today, unfortunately, we are in a world where capital has been like extensive, right? So people are getting insane cap. So they are, money can only take you to a certain distance. You may, you can't buy a product market. You can buy customers by giving them whatever, 100% cash back. But end of the day, you need to know if the customer will use it when you are at full price. So that's the...
Well said. So I've got time for two more questions for you. My next question is on fundraising. And again, there is this two sets of views. Bootstrap as long as you can. Raise money as soon as you get it. Your thoughts?
So again, depends on which stage you are at, and as in what kind of an entrepreneur you are, right? If you really, really believe in the idea, and if you can bootstrap it to where you can get to, it's good to bootstrap. But if by raising money, you can accelerate your growth, So for example, if I'm building a product and it's a unique product, if I was to get X amount of money, I can go from 0 to 3 years journey as soon as I can, which means I've eliminated competition to even step forward, then raise immediately, right? But if you are, don't raise for the sake of raising. So don't raise money because it's like, okay, I'll have money in the bank and then now I'll go out to do this.
Yeah.
So if you ask me bootstrap versus this, I would always recommend to raise because it's a very personal thing, but I feel like when you're bootstrapped, right, you become a little conservative. You don't take the necessary risks you need to. Whereas it can go both ways, but then when you've raised some money, you do end up taking a risk, and sometimes the risk is what is needed from an entrepreneur to go from do that journey faster.
Wonderful. And my last question to you, Rohit, and this is for the many, many people who will listen to our conversation. For someone who's been such a successful entrepreneur and someone who knows branding and marketing so well, what would you say are three lessons you would want our viewers and listeners to take away from our conversation?
I'll have to really think this through. But one thing that I always think by, and I said the same thing earlier, is take away the fear of failure out of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the step one to anything, is to take away the fear of failure. So don't be afraid to make that mistake. That's my standard line, right? So it's okay to go and do that. Two is get going. If you see, the thing is, I read this just this morning somewhere saying a bad script is better than a script that's not been written, right? So you'd never know what it is. So in my own portfolio of companies, I know somebody who technically got out to build something else and now is a very, very successful person building something else. But then the thing is, he got out to build something else.
Correct.
He has so many learned. No startup journey is a wasted effort. So don't, I see a lot of young people thinking that, hey, listen, if I picked up a job, I will make 60 lakhs a year. So I will consider that as a investment. Like, what if I don't succeed? You don't know the learnings that, like, no Ivy League college can give you the learnings that a startup does, right? Your entire journey.
So get going.
I would say get going, for sure, on that front. So get going. Don't be afraid to fail. And then, and be humble.
Be humble. That I think is an important one that you just said.
Yes.
So, Rohit, on that note, and your amazing lessons of take away the fear of failure, get going, do it now, and be humble. Thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me about your journey of creating three amazing, my many, many startups, but three exits. Thank you for talking to me about branding and how this whole process seems to be changing and changing at an amazing pace. And nobody seems to know what's going to come 1 year from now. And thank you for talking to me about startups and entrepreneurs. Thank you again.
Thank you,
and good luck.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.